Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, we are here to discuss the bodily physics and biology that goes into walking for 3 days.
If I could walk 500 miles. If I could walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more.
Who sings that?
Just to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to wind up at your door.
Okay, well, guess what? They didn't walk 5,000 miles. They apparently walked well over 300.
Yeah, so almost 500.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who knows? They might still be walking.
You never know. You never know. We are talking about the long walk. This is the adaptation of Stephen King's novel from 1979, which he wrote under a pseudonym.
And it was the first one he ever wrote. Not the first one that got published, right? But this is like his first one he wrote. Just your classic college novel, 400 page draft that he sat on for a little bit before whipping it out.
Because Carrie was his first book that was published. But yeah, interesting that this was the first thing he wrote and then published under a fake name.
Yeah. Intriguing. I'm pretty sure. Let me see.
But yeah, so they
it was the first novel he wrote. He wrote during his freshman year at college.
It's directed
400
by
pages later.
Francis Lawrence, who's done the last couple Hunger Games movies.
Yes.
So that's intriguing. And it was written by the writer of Strange Darling, the movie that we both liked last year. So good, strong pedigree. The plot of the movie is pretty straightforward, or I guess the premise of the movie is straightforward. Yeah. There's 50 young, like, teenage men, I guess, and they all start walking. The winner, or the, you know, whoever is the last one walking at the end gets a big prize. The losers get shot in the head. So if at any point you stop walking, you get killed.
You're
and
dead.
It's like, let's see who lasts the longest. It is very similar to the Hunger Games in premise, which does sort of make it interesting that this director decided to do it, because you would kind of think that he would maybe want to pick a different type of movie to direct when he's not working.
I mean, in some way,
but no,
there's a lot more headshots in this. Let's say there's a lot more. It's an R-rated movie, so different from the Hunger Games.
But it's the same thing, premise in like dystopian.
Yeah.
There's all these kids. They're going to get killed one by one. There's going to be one left at the end. They make a lot of money. And I guess the sort of difference at this too is that these people have chosen to be in the long walk because they are trying to get the money.
If you're all signing up, is it really a choice?
I guess so. Questions to ponder. I would be signing up for this. Especially like, it is intriguing because you look at the group of people when they're starting running or walking, and you're kind of like, I don't know if I think that some of these people have the sort of physical stamina to walk that long. Like, I understand that the allure of money is high, and that the wealth, or like that their sort of general welfare is so low that they feel, you know, pushed.
Yeah, they're
into
desperate.
This.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of like, with the Hunger Games, there's with the Hunger Games, there's a certain level of like luck involved. You know what I mean? Like, you could
bad luck. Yeah, Oh, you mean like once you're in the games?
Where it's like once you're in the games, like something like there's all kinds of different factors that could be going on. Right. So if so even if you're not like necessarily the strongest person, you might be able to sort of like get lucky and win. Yeah. With this, it's like there's one skill basically that you need, which is walking, which is a pretty easy skill to judge on like whether or not you have it, you know?
I know, but I think I mean, importantly, part of the premise is that this is in a sort of like nondescript version of the America where it's like post-war, it's like everyone's regime. Impoverished. There's no money, no food, no possibility, no upward movement, no middle class. Like it is just like if District 12 was the entire country, yes. to speak in Hunger Games terms. And it's just like, well, yeah, everyone's starving, everyone's like suffering, and so you don't get to like train for this. You don't get to like be sponsored by Nike and you have your comfortable shoes and you're ready to go. Like it's very much Oliver and company, like kids are just showing up with their sad like backpack crossbody bags and their leather shoes. Like it's not in one sense, yeah, I agree that it's like some of these people maybe shouldn't have applied, you know, knowing their limitations. But then also it's like in a world where you don't know anything else and where you don't have any other options, it's like, well, you just have to walk. Anyone right. can walk. So maybe.
That's what they say. Anyone yeah. can walk, I believe, is the direct quote from Ratatouille. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it for the most part is just that there is like a little bit at the start of Cooper Hoffman's character like getting to the walk, and there are like a couple of flashbacks throughout, but it's mostly just these 50 kids walking and then sort of systematically getting killed. I saw this maybe like a month ago or so at a press screening because I interviewed Mark Hamill. Who is in it, sort of playing the villain, the military guy who's running the long walk called the Major. And I watched this and I thought, this movie is so depressing. Like, there's no way that this movie could do well or that anyone will want to see it because it is so ridiculously sad. And like, I found it hard to watch because you're just like watching these kids get killed. And I think in the Hunger Games, because everything is so hyper stylized and people are dying in kind of weird ways, the deaths don't have the same impact on you. And I think also reading either the Hunger Games or the Long Walk, you know, you can read a sentence that's like, oh, and I heard a gunshot and I kept walking. And it's like, okay, you know what happens, but it has a different resonance when you're literally watching all of these like 16-year-olds get shot in the head.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so sad. Like,
yeah. Wait, so did you read this book?
I have not read the book.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe I wanted it's like 400 pages. It's crazy. I was sort of like planning on reading it.
Yeah.
And then I got invited to this early press screening for this. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to have time to read this in a week or whatever.
Yeah.
I will probably read it at some point because I've heard that the book is different than the movie in some ways. And I love Stephen King. And I think that this would be an interesting read, but I have not read it.
Well, it's because we also talked about the other Stephen King movie that also featured Mark Hamill.
The
Secret Life of Buck.
The Secret Life of Bees.
Chuck and the Bees. Yeah. which was, I was surprised this was a Stephen King. And you're like, oh, this is quintessentially Stephen King. Whereas when I think Stephen King, I probably would think something more like this, where it seems like he loves depressive violence and just hopelessness and all of that, which I understand to your point, that's not usually where he goes. And I can appreciate that something like Life of Chuck handles more of sort of the variables he plays with. So it was interesting, like going into this, knowing one, the premise is very depressing, and two, that you said, wow, that was depressing. But I found it like really compelling in an interesting way. I've been very thought provoking, and it is like I mean, yeah, it's a very talky movie because it's really just these characters walking, trudging along through rain, sunshine, and torture, just talking and getting picked off one by one for various through various flukes and depressive moments. But ultimately, it's like they're just spitballing, you know, they're just chatting. They're just chatting as this ominous regime looms overhead and this like pressure of a world they're forced to participate in, but don't fully, you know, have the capacity to think about or creatively find creative solutions out of. Like there's really just each forward step. And I don't know, I think as a depressed person, something about that like resonated with me. And it was like a very interesting film. And there's a universe in which this movie would be unwatchable, either because it's so depressing or because it's like repetitive, right? You just are watching kids get shot as they talk about how sad it is that they're in this situation. But the direction and the script, I think, and the characters they chose all made for a very like compelling piece. And I had went into it, I'd read the like summary of the novel, which like you said, it is pretty different. One, because you have 400 pages to like be in these kids' heads and all their weird, you know, I'll never get over Stephen King's fascination with like the sex life of children, but whatever. He loves to just like be in a kid's mind as they, I don't know, hyperfixate on something sexual. But so you don't get that in this movie, which I appreciated. But it did feel like an honest interpretation of the story and what Stephen King's message seemed to be, even though it ended in a pretty different way, at least as far as like the character and the finale and the wrap up of it all. But I think it worked in today's world compared to what would have worked in 1974. And yeah, I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this film, not necessarily as an experience, but as a sort of thoughtful piece of story to reflect the time we're in now.
Yeah, I think that I just like was so kind of like uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah.
That even though like I understand, you know, what it's doing and why it's doing what it was, like I really like sort of hated having to sit through it. Like there were parts in the middle where I was like, if I just got up and left, like would that be
would your life be different?
Yeah. Like yeah, just because yeah, I mean, and it works in the way that you sort of expect it to work, like I mean, as the all of the Hunger Games, you know, do, where you start and you kind of know like, okay, there's some cannon fodder, he's becoming friends with some people, so they're probably gonna last longer, there's some like more bullyish types, like you kind of know what the end result for most of these people are going to be, even if you don't know exactly. And they do a good job of making it as interesting as possible. Like, okay, it's now they're dreaming, it's the daytime, now it's night, now they're, you know, it's raining now, this person has doesn't have a shoe, this person's falling asleep, this person has to go to the bathroom, you know, like the various different things that could potentially go wrong. But it is so tense, and every time, because like there's this the moment that your clock thing stops through, it says like warning, and you get three warnings before you get shot, there's a lot of different sequences where you're kind of not sure which person's gonna get killed, because it's like, oh, person A is tying their shoe, but then person B goes back to help them with the shoe, and what, and so you're like, are both of them gonna get killed? Are neither of them gonna get killed? Are like, is one gonna, you know? So there, it's very like, there are some nice talking scenes in it, but it is a very like tense movie, because you know, you have to, you go through this multiple times, where sure, we're not necessarily seeing every one of the 50 kids die.
There's a lot though.
There's a section in the middle where they sort of like clear out a bunch, like at this hill overnight, and it's raining. So you mercifully like don't necessarily have to watch all of those people go in as graphic a fashion, but then you get enough of these sort of like false alarms in the mix that are tense, that it sort of makes up for the fact that, you know, there were some that left without much of a commotion. And then, of course, you get down to like the final eight and you're like, oh, okay, well, now I know that we're actually going to have to watch every single one of these people get killed.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, these are the characters that have been established. So,
but it, like, yeah, I like, so do you think it was a, like, do you just think you just didn't respond to it, or do you feel more strongly like this wasn't a valuable film?
I think the thing that's hard for me is, like, I think as a book, this makes a lot of sense. Mm. And I think that I don't want to necessarily, like, speak ill of The Hunger Games, but I feel like there's so much kind of, like, showmanship there. And the, I don't know if this movie sort of, like, bit off a little bit more than it could chew, with the director sort of being like, oh, here's another thing that's kind of similar to The Hunger Games that has a kind of similar message and a kind of similar setup, and we'll just make it a bit more, like,
I just don't think he was thinking of The Hunger Games in as much of a way as...
But it's the director of The Hunger Games.
But this is, like, a different story. Like, I don't know.
I mean, like, yes and no. I don't necessarily know that I needed to watch all of these people get killed in this fashion.
Yeah.
And it, for the story to, you know, of like, oh, these people are like so down on their luck that whatever. I also feel like that, yes, we get like they're talking and we get some backstory about some of them, but there's not like, there's not a ton of like world building, and I don't necessarily know what sort of the like if there is a takeaway other than like, oh, like
fashion. It's like an allegory more than anything, you know? Literal, you know, it's like, I guess I can see a point where it's like, was it exploitative to have so many like point blank headshots? Like, just gory, you see a kid's head explode over and over again. Like, admittedly, I tend to turn away, so it's not probably not as much of an impact if I were to, like, fully digest it. But I do feel like this piece was such an interesting, like, yeah, it's pretty depressing, right? Like, it's pretty hopeless, especially as we get to the ending where you have these two characters, Garrity, who is the main kind of lead. We start with him. He is the one with a loving family, and you're kind of confused why he felt the need to participate in this. And then he meets, what is his name?
Peter.
Yeah, McVries, who's played by the actor from Alien Romulus, who we both liked in that, and I think does really good here too.
Yeah, the robot guy. Yeah, David Johnson.
And so they're kind of the duo, and they are kind of this like yin and yang style, where you find out Ray, Garrity's character, is pretty anti the walk, and his goal in the end is to avenge his father's death. His father had gone against the regime, and you know, was trying to teach his kid like freedom of thought and expression, and got caught. Mm-hmm. And instead of like bowing down to this government, it gets, you know, decides to speak his truth and gets killed for it. And so Garrity is like, I'm going to join, and my final wish will be this soldier's gun, so I can kill the major, the Mark Hamill character who's running the show, who seems to be like the head honcho of not only this game, but just like in general, the whatever military, I don't know, government is in place in this world. And then McVries is like, oh, well, I think we've got to like find hope in the world. We've got to like live for something. We've got to look for joy. And we've got to like, you know, he's more of an optimist, even though he has the worst life. Like, he grew up with nothing. He's been abused. He's been, you know, he's only known violence in his life. And yet he's the one who has more of this like hope. So it was interesting watching them, one, find each other and kind of befriend each other and help each other. But then two, like knowing ultimately how it's going to end, I think adds attention to their relationship and kind of their perspectives, where, to spoil it, Garrity and him are the final two. And at each point, they kind of decide to sacrifice each other for the other one to win. And at first, you're like, no, no, no. And then Garrity is the one who finally like pulls back and dies. And so you're left with McVries, which is supposed to be like, okay, yeah, like the optimist wins. Like he's going to do good with this. Like that's the last hope for Garrity is like, you were right. You've got to like find the joy. You've got to live and build something better than this. But McVries is like faced with this, you know, trauma of being the winner, of losing his, you know, quote unquote brother he'd found finally. And he chooses Garrity's path, chooses the gun and shoots the major and then marches on. And I mean, one, I think it was such a twist for me because I'd gone in thinking I knew the ending. But two, I think it really echoes a lot of feelings of today's like world and kind of how do you function and how do you move through it, and is optimism only something to be corrupted, you know, like is there can you work within a system to fix it, can you accept the gift that this system promises and feel good about that if you know the cost, like the real cost of getting that. And I don't know, I found it like so well crafted. Like yes, it's violent and yes, it's gory, but I really trusted the writer and the director to really like honor this interesting tension. And like, I was moved by a lot of these characters, even though you only get to know them for like, you know, 3 days or whatever it is they're walking.
So, yeah. I feel like you like more sort of
depressing.
Yes, and, like nihilistic, yeah, kind of things than I do. Like, I think the thing with the Hunger Games is, even though I don't think she necessarily does it well, you're watching this horrible regime sort of get like dismantled to a certain degree, or at least for most of the time, there is some kind of plan, like, okay, like I'm going to stick it to the man. I'm going to, you know, whatever, which gives, I think as a reader, there's a certain level of like hope or takeaway, or like, okay, this is how we're going to get out of this. Like we're going to, you know, speak truth to power. We're going to eat the berries. We're going to do whatever. Where this just sort of, I don't know if it gives you, well, it definitely doesn't give you like that sort of level of catharsis or takeaway at any point. He wins the thing and then keeps walking, and sure, like he isn't killed, and you're kind of like, okay, well, like the major is dead now, so maybe that's like a positive.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, Matt, like how do you count, what do you count as a victory when it's like, okay, a happy ending could be that Peter takes his money and he's able to like build, you know, a safe space for him and maybe make a community around him better. But also maybe killing the major did rattle the world enough to change things, or maybe it did just avenge his personal friends. But how do you decide what's a happy ending when there's no happy ending?
Well, I think the question is like, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's lots of situations in the world that don't have happy endings, which I like, you know, understand. And I don't necessarily think that you should like slap on a jig at the end of every movie for no reason. But I think with this, there like wasn't really enough world building for me to kind of know the takeaway. Like when he kills the major, it's like, okay, is everybody watching this? Can everybody see this? Will this incite some kind of revolution? Is the major like actually in charge of anything, or is he just sort of like in charge of this walk? Like, does him dying have any impact on anyone really, other than, you know, like, will they just get a new major next year, or is he some sort of bigger figure where him dying will, you know, kind of shake the power structure?
Well, what did you feel as you left? Like, what did you feel? What did it make you feel?
Mostly, I was like, that was just like so miserable to sit through. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm such a like optimistic person in general that I don't really like. And not even optimistic, like just such like, I'm just such like a problem solver. I don't really like sitting in like a, like, oh, and actually there's no solution to this. It's just always going to be bad. It's like, no, I sort of refuse to take that mindset on things. Okay. And so with this, I don't know.
If you were McFreeze, okay, you're in the walk.
Right.
What is the solution?
Well, I think that he does what is best. Like, I think I agree with his choices in the situation that he's in. Mm-hmm. I don't have quibbles with the story itself so much as with the, like, why this, why now, what is this trying to say? Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it felt a little bit more opportunistic and cash grabby from, like, the filmmakers or the studio perspective of, like, oh, here's sort of like another version of the Hunger Games that we can make rather than like, oh, here's something that I don't know, like, is a call to action.
It was interesting to leave and be like, oh, this is the guy who did the Hunger Games. But I do feel like this is like a different producing body. Like, the Venn diagram of the two is such a narrow overlap that it's like, I can see a universe where this feels kind of like nihilistic, but I don't feel like it's cash grabby. It seems like the people involved wanted to produce this story because the story like resonated with them, or maybe the feeling of today. And it seemed like everyone involved really like honored that. And it wasn't, you know, in some ways you could say Hunger Games as films is counterproductive to the message of the books, because you are watching the, you know, the showmanship of it all and the, ooh, wow, what a cool death, like gruesome, you know, like you're, it is kind of antithetical to what Suzanne Collins was like kind of calling out. And that makes the Hunger Games an interesting reflection. Like, I think about how the most recent film, so much of the PR, like so much of the marketing was around like, oh, wear your Pan Am best. And it's like, did we lose the message here? Like, did we forget like what this is actually supposed to be calling out? Whereas this film seems very much like, oh no, we're going to call it out. Like, this isn't meant to be comfortable. And it's, you can't root for anyone because that comes at the loss of everyone else. And even the like most annoying characters here, even the guy who starts out as the bully, I mean,
yeah, you feel bad for him by the time.
And that's interesting too, because that's different than the book. It sounds like the book, like Stephen King's novels, there's often just bad people, like just bad people. And there's not as much work put towards, like, yeah, there's humanizing them, but it's not like, ooh, plot twist, they're actually like a sad good guy. Whereas this was like, all these boys you could feel for and understand, and even the like most annoying, worst ones, you end up feeling like, oh, that's, they could have been different in a different, you know, environment. Mm-hmm. They could have pulled themselves into a different person. But I don't know. So I feel like I really respect what everyone involved did in refusing to make it over the top. Like, yes, you do get some violent deaths, but there's also like a lot of care put into making these characters like interesting and diverse. And like, I was really affected when the indigenous person decided to like, because a lot of these people end up deciding to kill themselves rather than, you know, they just like trip or whatever. Like, a lot of it is there's a choice made where they can't go on anymore, so they'd rather die with some power. And so I felt like there was so much that was happening tangentially like to the main storyline that I was like, I don't know. It was interesting world building to me, even without the exact like mechanics of, well, how, what are these people like working towards? Why is America in such a, you know, dumpster? Like, where is everybody? What are these TVs they're streaming on? Like, I don't know. I felt like was enough world building for me to like be invested in the allegory of this like thought exercise of like, what do you do when, I don't know, facing down a regime that doesn't let you have time for creative problem solving. Like, it's like, I don't know. There were so many interesting choices. Like, even Garrity's dad deciding to not lie and be like, oh yeah, I stand with you guys. Like, I'm sorry, you're right. And instead, like, getting himself killed in front of his kid. Like, that is both a good, honorable choice, but also a sad, selfish choice, you know? And I think that's interesting to like see play out in such an extreme.
I feel like the character development and stuff was all well done. And I thought that the way that they managed to make this interesting for the film and to highlight these different characters with these different backgrounds and, you know, their relationships with each other and sort of how they handle the walk was really well done. Because, it's, you know, you probably watch 20 different people get killed at various points and none of them are really like the same. Like the situation or the storyline or the emotion or whatever is always different, and I think all of that really works. I think I just had more of an issue with sort of like the larger scale of it rather than like any particular issue. However, I will say, to sort of pivot slightly, I, as somebody who like runs marathons, I do not think that this would last this long. I don't know if anyone has
they
done
were impressive. And he's really figured out how to like sleep.
Like physics of this or whatever. But I'm like, they walk after 5 days and well over 300 miles. Mm-hmm. Like, that is an insane amount to walk. And granted, I have never been in a situation where it's like, oh, if I stop walking, I'm going to get shot in the head. So I'm sure that that does really instill in you a lot more energy and sort of ability to go on than if you can, you know, just stop whenever you want to. But like earlier this year, one of my friends who's like a very, you know, a fairly like physically fit person did the Great Saunter, which is where you walk the entire like perimeter of Manhattan, which, you know, like basically took her all day, like, you know, over 12 hours. I think it's 30 some miles. Like she, you know, stopped to eat or whatever at various points. And like she was like hobbling by the time she got to the end. And that's somebody who is a like is in good shape. Like walking 300 miles, I don't even know how I feel like I just don't feel like the body can do that. Like I understand that for the storyline, we needed to keep going on because, you know, we couldn't just have everybody drop in the middle of the first night or whatnot. But I was kind of like, I would love to see some studies on like the science of this, because I am intrigued by like how long could somebody actually like go. Obviously ultra marathon people, you know, run 100 miles in a sitting, but like those are people who are like training for it, and these are just like random 16-year-olds
in bad shoes carrying like the worst backpacks known to man, no sun protection whatsoever. I mean, like,
yeah, and they have to eat while they're walking, the pee while they're walking,
I'm curious how, I was trying to see how far they go in the book, like if it's technically shorter or not. But yeah, no, it's like, and that's, you know, they did something interesting with the premiere, like they had a bunch of people, like there were treadmills during the showtime, and they had to keep the same pace, which is interesting. And I think again, like low stakes and also only an hour 30 to do it, but highlights the physicality of it is actually pretty impossible. Like even just the idea of like not sleeping enough for 5 days, like I just feel like your body would give out. I don't know,
right? Like I'm shocked that there weren't more people who were just like passing out, because that feels like what would happen is like at a certain point it wouldn't necessarily be so much of a choice as like you just pass out, which I think would be the, I think if I was in this, that would be my strategy of like, okay, let's just keep going until we pass out. Then, you know, whatever, like I don't have to worry about this anymore.
You're like, what will be,
because people pass out in marathons all the time. So I feel fairly confident that like I could, gun to my head, literally keep walking until I, you know, like got heat stroke or whatever was gone.
Yeah, no, and it was like painful to see the nosebleeds or the broken shoes or the some kid like twists his ankle, and just like the you just are forced to keep walking. I don't know. There's probably a metaphor in there somewhere too, but Yeah, but yeah,
I'm also sort of like, if I was doing this, and yeah, it's like, okay, you're start bleeding or whatever, and it's day two, and you're like, okay, usually these people like last 5 days. I think that I might at that point be like, okay, you know what, like, if I'm gonna get shot in the head, let me get shot in the head now, rather than have to walk another 2 days on this bloody stump and then get shot in the head. Like, I don't know.
It's so funny because I feel like whenever we talk about these sort of apocalyptic stories or like survival stories, it's like your like bridge for survival, you're like, ah, oh, whatever, I want to last. But I think you would like be pushed more than you think. Like it's interesting to think. I think there's been studies where it's like actually optimists are the least likely to survive because they don't actually, they can't persevere once it does get hard.
Yes.
Not mm-hmm. calling you out. It's just interesting to think about, like, well, yeah, but what else are you going to do but keep walking? Like, okay, you twist your ankle, but there's a universe in which your body can convince you that maybe everyone else will trip and die in the next 10 minutes, 20 minutes, hour, 3 hours. Like, you just have to keep moving. Like, that's survival, you know, you just have to.
The thing about me is that I am an optimist, but I'm also a decision maker. Like, I think that my decisiveness is like part of the optimism. It's like I assess whatever's going on and make a decision and then go with that. And so if the decision is like, oh, okay, there is an optimistic outcome that is possible, then I sort of decide like, okay, well, that's what we're doing. Like, that's what we're going with. And so we progress in that way. And I don't get bogged down by the sort of like woes of it because I've made the decision to go with the optimistic point of view. But if I'm in a situation and there is not that outing, then I think I would also make the decision to be like, oh, okay, well then like, what are we doing here? So I do
but
feel like
I think the human body is just programmed to want to survive.
Yeah, but also like, I feel like getting shot in the head is so like instantaneous. Like, I don't know.
Well, some of these people are just left to
feel like
bleed
just
out.
As somebody who is like, who's run a marathon, like, yeah, you get to a point in the back half of the race where there is like a certain level of delirium, and that's only with 26 miles, where like you would kind of take anything to be finished.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a certain degree of like, okay, because I signed up for this and did all of this training and I'm on mile 24, like, and it's going to be almost equally annoying to just stop now because like, how am I, like, I need to get to the end because it's like where the car is, whatever. You kind of have to like force yourself to keep going. But if somebody like handed me a buzzer and was like, oh, like you can just, you know, like not feel anything and just disappear from the earth. Like, I think that would be like that is something that would be tempting at mile 24 of a marathon, let alone on day two of this, whatever. But also, again, maybe like you said, the optimism part of me would just be like, okay, yeah, no, sorry, I'm done, bye. And that you would be in there like trekking for forever. However, I think that it would be tricky for you because I don't know if your normal walking speed is fast.
I think it'd be hard, yeah.
You're sort of like slow saunter. I feel like would be picking up warning signs like immediately.
No, I do not think I would survive this. I'm under no delusion. But I do think if I found myself in that situation, I would just be like, well, might as well keep trying. Like, whatever. I can't like not try. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's also what kind of works here. Like, yeah, there's a lot of analysis of the book, obviously, and I'm sure there's growing analysis around the film, but just like, you know, he wrote it as sort of a response to one, the country as it was then, but also the throes of the Vietnam War and this like sacrificial parade of boys being sent to fight and die. And I think it's interesting that could be, you know, 40, 30 years ago, and we're still Oh, wow. No, that was so long ago. Oh my gosh, we're so old. I can't believe it's 2025.
Well, 45 years. Yeah. 46 years ago.
And it's like still relevant for different reasons today. And so I can see why this, you know, it's been in the works for a while. It was attached to different people for a while, blah, blah, blah. But it did end up coming out, and I think an interesting time. I mean, not only just generally, but also like politically right now, like it's interesting. And you have this major character played by Mark Hamill who loves a Stephen King movie, I guess. And there's a moment where he's like, you know, he's deluding the boys or himself or this world in these like sort of pep talks where he's like, where else in the world would you have an opportunity like this? And it's like laughable how you can be in the shittiest shitstorm of all shitstorms and still deluding yourself of like, this is the greatest country in the world because we do have the opportunity. We do have the chance to become, you know, the 1% or whatever it is. We do have this golden chance to win this huge, you know, golden egg of fame and fortune. Whereas, yeah, you'd hope that in a realistic world, the idea would be like, well, let's just split up this big pie we give these people at the end of each year and kind of spread it out and see if that lifts the entire country out of this sinkhole they've created. But it's like, well, no, the selling point is the sort of individualized success story. And I think that is America. Like, obviously, you can argue about like how, you know, extreme it is or how like hopeless it is or whatever. Like, obviously, it's not literal. But I think there is something to be said about the scrappy, individualized idealism of America as like, you can pick yourself up by the bootstraps and make it work. And you can be the special one. And you matter more than any of the like larger community at, you know, that we can all like help each other around. And I don't know. I find that so interesting, and that we've failed to learn our lessons again and again. Like, this story could have resonated with people in 1974, and it's still resonating with people in 2025. And it's all centralized on this idea of a failed American state that's still pushing for this sort of meritocracy of good luck and fortune lifting you out of a shithole you're told is all you're good for. Like, I don't know. It's just like something to think about. Something mm-hmm. to learn from. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will be the time. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So all in all, I think that's why the story resonates. Like, yeah, I get that I'm a more depressed person. I get that I'm like maybe a little more hopeless or yeah, negative or nihilistic or whatever you want to say.
Just like watching kids die.
Whatever you want to say. But ultimately, I do think that the thing that sticks out to me isn't that I like being miserable. It's that it like echoes something that feels really true to, I don't know, the lived experience of a lot of people, unfortunately.
Hmm.
So yeah, is it pessimism or is it just realism? You know, like I don't know,
but I shan't be watching again to find out, unfortunately. Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that was a one and done. I do want to read the book still because I think that would be interesting. But I was like, I don't actually need to watch this many people get their heads blown out again. So
yeah,
it's so interesting because it's like, I love a horror movie.
Yeah, I know you love.
But I think that's because it's so like fakey, and this obviously like isn't real, but it feels there's more realism to it in a way that's
maybe more than you even want to acknowledge.
Right, and that's exactly
what makes you shut down.
Where it's like, I don't think anybody is gonna like crush my head in a toilet seat or whatever, you know, like they're gonna do in a damn slasher where people yeah get killed by an icicle or you know, whatever.
But but there is a universe where this will be us. 2035, you and I will find ourselves on a dirt road marching for food and a better life.
I think my strategy for this would be
extra because shoes.
I do think I'm a good walker, and I think I'm well, like, I'm capable of doing well at this. Mm-hmm. I think I would really sort of, you know, have to like work out the first day, sort of assess the people's general energy. And if I felt like, oh, okay, like I have a chance to do this, like then sure, great, perfect, like let's go. And if it at any point became apparent to me that this was not going to be my thing, I'd be like, okay, and see ya. Like out we go.
That's crazy. That's delusion, I really think. But I'm happy you feel good about that.
Look, Shelby, when you have the Lord and Savior Jesus
Christ. Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot. There's better things waiting for you.
Yes, there's stuff that's coming down the pike. And maybe that's the thing. When Heavenly Father calls you home, you go to the celestial wonderland or whatever it is. And then you don't have to worry about these things.
That's true. That's true. Beautifully said.
But, okay, well, we'll be back next week, I believe, to talk about the Paul Thomas Anderson, Leonardo DiCaprio movie, which has been getting insanely good reviews. Have you been following this at all? Like,
no, isn't this like the Nepo Baby extraordinaire?
Oh, are there a lot of Nepo Babies in it?
Isn't it like Paul Thomas Anderson's son is directing?
No, that's Daniel Day-Lewis. You're getting this
mixed up.
Is starring in a film directed by Daniel Day-Lewis's son.
Oh, okay.
Thomas Anderson, who did Licorice Pizza, which we didn't like, but also did, you know, Phantom Thread and Boogie Nights and whatever.
Okay.
Anyways, he has a new movie coming out, which Shelby will probably also hate, but you never know. Sometimes she surprises.
Yeah.
And she liked Civil War, which
is that Paul Thomas Anderson?
To this day, no, but it's a movie that I would not in a million years have thought that you would have enjoyed, and yet somehow
that's
you
crazy.
Did.
Everyone would have guessed I liked that. That's literally like
not. It's from the same director as Men, which is one of the worst movies I've ever witnessed.
Okay.
But anywho, it's supposed to be like all the reviews are like this is the best movie that of the year. Like this is one of the best movies of our lifetime.
Wait, what's it called?
Best movie, One Battle After Another.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about
this.
From
the preview, I'm very confused as to what it's about.
Okay.
But Regina Hall is in it, who I love. Ugh. Tiana Taylor.
Okay.
Leonardo DiCaprio is, I guess, the lead. Mm. And yeah, it comes out next week. And then the following week is when Shelby is very excited to go watch lyric videos at the movie theater.
Taylor Swift, yeah. Showmance. Showgirl.
Showgirl, yes. Yeah. The life of a showgirl.
Yeah.
Well... Okay, this has been lovely.
Yeah.
Always great to talk about child murder with you. And we'll see you next week. Bye.